Good afternoon. You're listening to Wavelength on Resonance 104.4 FM and www.resonancefm.com on the net on May the 8th, 2015. And we welcome back Bob Parks.
Hello. And I'm talking to the people upstairs in Resonance as well, because they're particularly listening to today's interview, because they said they were really interested in it.
Yes, yes. Well, I think they're looking forward to it after yesterday's catastrophe.
What happened yesterday?
I can't remember anymore, Bob.
I think it's great for David Miliband, actually. I think
Really?
Yeah, he can make an entry now.
He's
sort of left the scene.
Is he going to take over now, then?
Well, no one else is there.
I thought you might seize power, actually.
By energy and enthusiasm,
exactly.
Not by power and force.
You just sort of stand outside the Houses of Parliament and beam your thoughts into the place.
That's right. Yeah, okay. Yeah. I'll do that next.
Okay.
It's another project.
Right.
I can handle it.
So, Bob, I don't know if we need to introduce you again, because you've been on the show many times now.
I need to introduce the show to me.
Yeah, right.
Okay. It's a quadruple take, that, but don't worry.
Yeah. Okay, well, you can do that. Go on, then.
To introduce the show to me, I've become so used to talking on here, I'm not at all nervous or anything like that. So it needs to be brought back to me, the reality of what I'm doing. So
right.
In that sense, I need feedback from
Well, you're broadcasting to the world. I mean, there's no need to be nervous, you know.
No, absolutely not. I'm not scared of the world.
Right. And you have a film has just been completed about you, 99% completed.
The R&B feeling, yeah. We went to a private screening at the Soho Screening Rooms.
Yep.
Is it last Saturday or the Saturday? I think it was last Saturday.
It must have been last Saturday.
And my brother came over from Australia.
Yep.
And I told you, the only thing he said was, hi, Tom, if you're listening, by the way. He said, it does you justice. And that's it, really. He said, I don't really say anything.
So it's made by, shall we mention the directors?
Everything.
Okay, so it's Nathaniel Mellors and Marcus Head. Marcus Vernerhead.
He's in Cannes right now, so he can't.
Okay. And they are this sort of directors. Nathaniel is an artist. Marcus is a filmmaker. You are a performance artist. Mm. And they've sort of been following you around for several years, haven't they?
Nearly 4 years now.
Right.
Well, Matt Black, who's Stephen Cohen's son of Cold Cut, and Stephen Cohen was one of my tutors at art school, said that the modern pop group consists of a conceptual artist, a technician, a musician, well, something like a composition of different disparate elements, yeah.
So the film, it has moments of pathos and humour and chaos. There's some great bits in it. It starts off quite pacey, doesn't it?
Mm.
With you in sort of on a corner of a street in Los Angeles.
Right, and there was, as I said, a 60-foot jet of water going because they'd knocked over a fire hydrant in the process of upturning the car.
It's sort of a bit like you in life, because the scene is one of chaos. It's like it'd been a car crash.
Dementia, I'd prefer to say. And yeah, we did a good... Yeah, it was good, yeah.
Yeah, which...
On the corner of Pink's, it was...
That was completely by chance.
No, it was always, these things always happen. It was completely inevitable.
No, but were you looking for an accident?
No.
No.
Well, you never find an accident if you're looking for it. Do you?
Right.
They follow you.
So you're standing there sort of talking about rhythm and blues in Los Angeles, and then in the background there's a sort of overturned car and a fire hydrant and fire engines and police.
Yeah.
And it's pretty chaotic.
Yeah.
But as the film progresses, it becomes more and more about you and your mother, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. I think she's the star of the film, personally. She's terrific. Yeah. Some wonderfully touching pieces in it.
Yeah.
Do you remember when I bring all those dolls and pile them on top of her?
The dolls are sort of placed next to her, sort of one by
and
one.
I forget to stop. It's
in the house, the house in Sway.
Yeah.
And that takes up pretty much the biggest chunk of the film. It's going to be shown on BBC, isn't
it? Well, there are four sections. The first section is like my history. The second section is Sway. The third section is the accident. And the fourth, chapter is Los Angeles.
Right.
It's actually, I want to talk to you a bit about, do you remember we met up at Marcus Kemp? Is it the bookshop that you...
Oh, yeah, Marcus Campbell. Yeah.
Campbell, right.
I'll give it a plug.
We had an issue, yeah. Hi, Marcus. And here, I wrote something down. Can I read it out?
Absolutely.
Okay, this is what I wrote out of, and it might give a point of discussion, but there's a little bit I want to say before I get into that.
Yeah,
I went to see The Falling yesterday. It's ever such a good movie. And I noted that Alspensky and The Fourth Way were mentioned in the credits. I know there's a spiritual link with what I'm investigating. It's a whole dimension and suggests I'm heading in the right direction. It comes from energy and enthusiasm rather than power and force. I'll go into all of this. Mum, she's dead now, but she knew or knows how the spiritual work. Now, the producer, one of the co-producers, Tommy, he said he had a link with the Rogue family. He's actually said he's got a link with Nick.
Nicholas Rogue.
Yeah, but he said... I don't recall saying that. Now I said the movie's out of the way. Anyhow, he said with the family. So I'm going to... And I saw Tammy Rogue, her name mentioned in the credits. So I'm going to... I've emailed him already to see if he can arrange a meeting with her. Because it links him with this film. And I'm sure Nathaniel has some input in the movie, in the presentation of my performance art in its relation to the rest of the film. Because I see it very much as... The film's about the build-up to those last few minutes, the performance, you see. And it's the first time I've ever had my stuff recorded. But let me just say a little bit about the falling first. This was an interview with the director. It explores the phenomenon of mass hysteria. Now, I've got a project out of this. If it's if it goes down well and I get fame, well, not necessarily fortune, but some impact and influence... I want to put it, and I'm not putting it, I'm going to put it out to everybody else in the world, but not to Nathaniel and co, because I want to get my ideas formulated before I present it to them. But I'm putting out the, because I've only got halfway, page 150 through this essay, and I want to write the whole thing before I distill it into something to talk to them about. Anyhow, mass hysteria, senior moment looming in the background here, but I think, anyhow, my project is to... as part of the plan when Tom came over from Australia was to make it fun to begin with. And, well, I went to the south of France with my tutor to Uzès so many years ago, just outside of Avignon. And we stopped by... where did we stop by? Oh, I can't remember. Anyhow, on the way back, we had the choice between Vézelay and Giverny. And I went to Giverny, but I thought, I've got to go to Vézelay. So we got Airbnb. It's fantastic. It's idyllic. Place that we stayed in Vézelay, right by the river with the monastery on, well, whatever it's called, on the top of the hill. And that's the perfect, epitomizes all the goodies about French symbolism and fin de siècle thinking. So my plan is for this movie, which I want to call Mass Psychosis. And I've got a group I want to form, the active subconscious. So all of this goes together. Anyhow, it would be Marcus, John, who had sex with the dead woman, who's in Bologna right now. Nathaniel, who's the established artist. And Miriam and myself. And you know, like a pop group, they get away somewhere in the country estate and thrash out all those tunes. Well, this is a perfect location in Vézelay, you see. I want to get them, talk them into it. But I know that they've all got, like Marcus, this movie, The Punderson's Gardens, is, I mean, he does his commercial work to support his, you know, non-commercial work. And really, this is his bet. Right, his brainchild. So for me to come in on that and claim something of that would be almost impossible, but it's my ambition. And similarly, Nathaniel, he's made his reputation through films, and I think probably Marcus was his movie director, and he sort of involved me in his life, basically, and which is why I'm here talking and so on. But anyhow, so all of that. So anyhow, I think this movie, it seems to be something very much in the air, and this film is around mass hysteria, which isn't 100 miles away from a thing. It says that people could do bizarre things and believe bizarre things and yet not be insane, which are transmitted by sight and sound. It's got a psychogenetic origin. It's hysteria as a neurological condition. It's not even a mental illness, just a collective response. So here's what she said. A ceremony of exorcism often led to a worsening of mass hysteria. It felt sexy. It's an odd word to use, but I did feel thrilling. I did feel it thrilling. They singled out three of us as the ringleaders, and the visiting priest who had done the exorcism in Africa exorcised us in this after school in the tiny chapel. So it's mass psychogenic illness, psychogenic. The loss of restraint releases a previously released behaviour, and it offers an otherwise otherwise escape from tensions at the time. They happen more than we know, and while the pattern is quite well defined, they are not. They're still shrouded in mystery. It's out of, if you feel empathy, mass psychosis outbreaks. They remain a powerful group activity. Their heart lies in an overwhelming need for a sense of belonging or connection. So this is the connection with mass, and obviously mass psychosis is what Hitler used. So I'm canalizing that energy away from, and he used it. There's a physics equation: energy, power equals energy over time. And I've taken the aspects of power and energy. And for me, the breakdown of power, as in relation in political sense, is always been used through force, and that the history of totalitarianism is the implementation of power or whatever through force. But there's the spiritual side, which was Malevich's. I won't go into that again, which is the course of energy, and instead of force, you use enthusiasm. So the introduction of this other aspect of totalitarianism through energy and enthusiasm is a course that I've exploded. And this, to me, is a completely unexplored side. So this is what I want. This is what I wrote that I wanted to read out to you.
Mm-hmm.
There was an issue. This is with both Marcus and with Nathaniel, but Nathaniel to begin with, and increasingly with Marcus, with the reenactment of Dad's pulling out his catheter, which I storyboarded and planned in all its horror to have as the opening sequence of my movie with actors and special effects. But Marcus said the act of killing, that documentary that was evolving, had already used reenactment in the documentary format, and that has won lots of prizes, resolved it by getting the editor of The Act of Killing to finish off the editing for my film. So my performance art is a different concept to reenactment, and as we'd be accused of copying The Act of Killing in such a scene by using the editor for my film in this way. Made it an advancement in an original way by incorporating my performance art as a climax to the movie. So I see, I'll go on with it. My performance art stems from Jackson Pollock's literalism and substantially different to acting as generally practiced today. Although at the time of Apocalypse Now, I had an interview with Fred Ruse at the Burbank Studios and put forward the idea then of performance art by literally doing things like having yourself shot in the arm. It would meet the increasing demands on Hollywood actors for heightened reality, characterizations, and portrayal, rather than sensorially recreate it, Stanislavski, to actually doing it. He referred to me to a friend who was Fred Ruse, was a performance artist, he's a producer of Apocalypse Now, who said she wasn't interested in my particular area of performance art, which was sex. There were the choices in the late 60s were either self-mutilation or sex, and I went for sex, and as I didn't have any girlfriends, I used myself. This is not through choice, but it was just stuck in there. This is the late 70s. This is when I had the interview with him. After the event of the late 60s and early 70s, when performance art was particularly radical and I was involved with it. Subsequently, I have worked, after having already studied at the Lee Strasberg Theatre Institute for 2 years in Hollywood, through which I got the interview with Ruse, to incorporate aspects of his Stanislavski sensory work with my literalism. When a year or so ago, the Hayward Gallery had masterclasses of practicing artists from all over the world taking one-off classes. I had the Beninese artist, I can't remember his name, and the director of the John Lennon biopic, Sam Taylor
Wood.
She did one, and I got into big trouble going on about the guy who she'd put forward was a big phony. He didn't know about method acting, and everyone was balked, and I made too much noise in my sensory work. But actually, as you do, I won't do it on here because it will explode the room, but you'd make a loud sound to open up your whole... Shall I do it?
Yeah.
Ah! Ah! You open up and that sort of gets your...
Uh-huh. And you did this at some point.
Well, this is what you do as part of the Lee Strasberg thing. Uh-huh. But they were only half doing it, they weren't in the English way. Anyhow, then a Russian performance artist who told me far from being innovatory, I thought this combination of sensory and literalism was, on my part, there are academies in Russia set up to teach this mysticism of bringing together literalism with sensory work. The Finno-Uric practice of ritualistically, for example, working through symbolic movements, preventing others and safeguarding one's own thoughts, so you can put a ring of fire around your thoughts and prevent people from coming in them. It's a whole library of shamanic practices, practiced for many centuries, you know, all in Russian academies all over the place. And it's So although contrived and deliberately self-conscious, and a change of focus for the movie, which William found disconcerting and taking away from the effective thrust of the movie, I conceived it differently. And I suspect this perception is shared by both co-directors for similar reasons, with the performance art as the climax of the movie without being stated as reason. With the performance art as the climax of the movie without being stated as reason. Which, with the performance art... This is the subtlety and the underpinning and an original developmental advance from The Act of Killing, with its editor at the helm to steer proceedings. This is why I say the movie, most significantly for me, represents the first time my lifelong artistic practice of primarily performance art has been effectively recorded and presented. And this is why, for me, the movie is so gratifying and a possible selling point for distributorship, because it doesn't fall back on syndicalization, but uses directly something that represents my inner reality in the shape of my performance art. In this movie, it's a true perspective of my art, somehow embracing the seemingly impossible. That which Ken Ford, my tutor, after the review I had in Freeze magazine, described as revelatory on the part of my co-curators, that was for the Birmingham show, bringing together meaningfully all the disparate elements of my art and having people who understand me, understand something behind me from strengths. Anyhow, they understand where I'm coming from, basically.
So there's a bit in the film where there's a suggestion that your brother comes to rescue you from somewhere.
Yeah, I was in LA, and Tom doesn't like the Hollywood or drove around Watts and I was dirty. And
but the suggestion seems to be that you'd gone a bit too far out and needed to be brought back from the brink, otherwise you would have just gone...
Well, I was just sort of starting, really, actually. But and John says in the movie, he was the craziest one around at that time, more so than Chris Burden or Paul McCarthy. Actually, Paul McCarthy and John had a radio program called Close Radio, and they invited me to do one of the broadcasts.
Oh, really?
Can I say what? It's quite rude. What I was going to do, but maybe not. No, but
how rude is it?
Very rude.
Can we hint at it? Can you give us a suggestion of what it's?
Well, it's aspects of almost into paedophilia.
Oh, God,
it might
no.
get interpreted
no,
that way.
No, you didn't say that. No,
no,
no.
Okay, but it's not. But you know, it came around. It's not, absolutely not. But that might be the perception of the thing, you see.
Okay,
but it was an interest, and it was out of that. I was making because it was the first time there were international phone calls. I was going to make a disclosure to my mum and dad in England and my brother in Australia on air when what was happening was happening. You see, that was going to be anyhow. The phones wouldn't work, so I got my church to come out, and I did a whole thing with the gospel church for the radio program as a subject, which is equally as good. It's kind of like this.
But did your brother hear what was going on and decided to come and get you out of there?
No, he came out as a holiday. He was an accountant. He's just got his qualification. His hair was falling out actually at the time. He had gone through quite a lot of nerves. And Bunty had sent him out to, you know, have a bit of a break with me. And he came back worse than when he went out.
Oh, really?
Apparently. Okay. But anyhow, Tom didn't like, you know, where I'd got to.
Right.
But anyhow.
So what did he do? What did he do when
he had lined up a show for me with a friend, Alan Rogers, in Australia, who went to Royal College of Art, but he knew someone in a gallery in Brisbane, in the Spring Hill Gallery, and he'd lined up a show. Uh-huh. That would be my first art show. And I thought, well, I'll go with that man. And so I came back to England, literally. It was portraits, and they suggested I do portraits of the brothers and sisters from my gospel church in South Central LA.
Right.
And I had two choices, either which I wanted to do, because I'd prefer to work from life. Giacometti style, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But I thought, well, if I'm going to do that for a year, I have to chuck the job in. And here I am in LA, stranded without any money, ready to go back. Safer. And what I decided to do was throw my money into photography. I went to the, got the best colour blow-up people in, New York Colour in Hollywood. And I had big colour blow-ups. And I did photorealist stuff, which I exported it to England. And then... Yeah. The photographs, which is, I had big, I had $6,000 somehow in the bank, I don't know where, yeah. And that supported me for a year, uh-huh. And the show and the photographs and all of that, yeah. Sort of thing. So I sent the, at the same time the show went on in Australia, I spent a year painting it, mm-hmm. I sent the photographs back to my church in South Central LA, so that's that.
But I suppose I'm trying to get it, your brother didn't like some aspects of what you were involved in.
Well, he thought I was drawn and haggard and, you know, it's totally exhausted, which was probably true. And Mum said, you know, when you came home, that you really looked completely exhausted. And
so do you think he did the right thing by trying to...
Yeah, because I don't like America anyhow, but I like England. And so it was a, you know, it was a smart... But it's not through my choice, because I would have pursued... the area that I was going to, and I was beginning to make a niche for myself.
Because also somebody else in the film, I think it's Miriam, she is almost like they associate you with these other artists, but then they almost kind of say something like, but you went too far out.
Well, that's like, Barbara Petit-Smith said that, and John Duncan, when they said that when Bob came out here.
Yeah.
Well, John said that, in fact, Paul McCarthy was at that time. What... John says about Paul, because now he's become a millionaire, basically through his art, he's useful archiving stuff, so he's got all the old clothes, but he's not a practicing artist anymore. He's not on the front line, so to speak, which is fine, but he's doing a valuable job, you know, where he's at right now. But he said that I freaked them all out, because when they were just trying to, at that stage, tie things down after Chris Burden had been shot and all that sort of, and done all these scary things, he then wanted to record it.
Yeah.
But what I was interested in, opening it up even further, and it was threatening their, you know, it was basically destabilizing everybody, and they couldn't see that as a creative process. So I came out, and she thought I was nuts, I think, Barbara Smith, and that's what she said in the film. Same thing with, like, my fife playing.
So that's what
you know. I play the flute kind of thing in the church. I think what Neil said. He said he couldn't play. He's got no technique whatsoever.
So you're a sort of punk flute player in a way.
It was at that era, really.
Yeah. So, but I mean, do you think there's a point where it does go too far? I mean, do you
I don't believe in too far. What's too far?
Well, where if you, I think you earlier
suicide you, is the well, only too far.
Okay. Well, okay.
You know, that's the obligation.
Well, so there comes a point where you might be a danger to yourself.
No, there comes a point where you may be dead.
Yeah, but the point at which you are a danger to yourself comes before that.
Well, that's whatever it is. You can't, you know, that's part of one's commitment to being a home. I don't like an anti-artist, because I don't like that term.
Right.
But that's what goes with the job, basically. Do everything. Everything. I've always said I do everything except kill myself.
Right.
Or murder somebody else, or sort of hurt somebody else.
I was going to say,
I'm a pacifist.
But do you think there's a point where people should be stopped from what they're doing?
No, I think that's the point where they should be forced to continue it, because that's the role. I mean, it doesn't have to be horrible, it's gruesome, it could be fantastic and very happy.
Yeah.
But that's if the artist has any role, it's to explore the unexplored side of inner space, basically, and to go into areas that people can't. That's their obligation, that's why they're getting paid.
Yeah,
it's got to be fun, man. If it's not fun, if it's not
well,
new.
That's what I mean. If it's fun, but what if the person involved has been basically, I don't know, in a state of misery or anxiety,
like Dostoevsky writing Crime and Punishment, or you wouldn't diss all that.
I was thinking more of you at the end of this film. Actually, I was wondering. There comes a point where the filmmakers are, what do you call it, compliant or a party to.
Well, I would hope so.
Your insanity, as it were, as a spectacle.
I would hope so. And that's, you know, absolutely. And then we're all implicated.
You are implicated.
Absolutely. Everybody is. Yeah.
Right.
I just thought the other day, it's basically obvious thought, really.
I didn't mean that you are insane. I'm not saying you're insane.
You can say that. I don't know.
But visually, the spectacle at the end of the film is of you going through some, what can only be called a sort of ritual. which most people would describe as pretty insane behaviour.
No, what I did was you have Damien Hirst taking art, and he used that word so advisedly, outside of the realms of art into science, like things like the pharmacy and what have you, it's pushing back the boundaries. And instead of going into outer space or society or whatever you want to call it, in his case about capitalism and money and all those sort of things, my thing was into inner space, i.e. Courbet coined the term the inner voice. And one stage in from that is a medical condition like schizophrenia or anxiety or medical conditions. And I, not through choice, I got involved with my own mental illness. And instead of backing away from it, I used it.
How would you define your own mental illness?
It's anxiety.
Okay.
I've suffered from anxiety for 30 years. And then I did the deal with my mum to take it with her when she died in the car crash. And that's part of the movie. Anyhow, it's a really good film. It's very poignant and all that sort of thing. So I think, no, that's a point of discovery. And our obligation is to push those things beyond those limits. Because I think, for example, this is what comes with mass psychosis. I think, I've said this quite a few times before. Mm-hmm. The example of coal tar being a waste product of coal, which was then reperceived by the petrochemical industry to produce plastics. And far from being a waste product, it's a billion-dollar industry now. And similarly, I see anxiety as only what plastics were for outer experience and ease and transportation. That anxiety has is a fuel for inner space, for consciousness, and I think it links in with consciousness theory. And people are terrified of it, but I think it's just misdirected power. So I'm sure that voodoo directs it deliberately. I mean, voodoo societies are way more sophisticated than European thinking. It's like it leaves it way behind. Their conception of space is sixfold times more sophisticated. Mm. It's the poorest country in the world, but it's in terms of psychological insight. Well, actually, psychoanalysis uses a lot of voodoo practices because it concerns the whole human instrument, not just what Christianity does, which is the good. It doesn't classify good and bad. It's all part of the being a human being, and it would refer to that.
You went to Benin, didn't you?
Yeah, I never had much fun in my life. I had a goat sacrificed, and the power comes out of the animal. There's an interesting tension created in the movie because here I am naked, throwing colours all over the room. And here, ten frames before is the church.
At the end of the film, it's after we've had this long passage where you've been living with your mother and then your mother dies in an accident.
Yeah, which I
and then
kill.
The final scene of the film, it almost looks like someone in a state of complete breakdown and anguish and a complete lack of coping.
I'm very flattered by that analysis because you've just given an analysis of my performance art, which is that is what I would portray.
Yeah.
And this is like, I'm trying to portray something, and I'm just making this up to go along, but it is basically the state of uncertainty. This is the state that's very, I mean, even animals have a difficulty with that. I mean, I know we're animals, but dogs or whatever, they need sort of they can't deal with uncertainty in their behaviour. So, but that's really the safest place, and to live with that uncertainty is perhaps I live it out in my performance art where I can't do it in life. Mm. Like Suzanne was going to represent what he saw in front of him, and he could never do it, but his was constant striving. That's why he's, in my books, the greatest artist of all time. Uh-huh. Because he wasn't repentant, he didn't back away, he just stayed on the whole way through and just addressed that particular, the most difficult side of visual perception in my books. And, added quite a lot. So, yeah, go on.
All right. Perhaps.
Shall I carry on with the lecture?
You could start with your lecture again.
Right, I'm just up to page 76 and I've got up to 150 already. So
right, okay.
Shall I just carry on?
Absolutely. Yeah.
All right, here we go. Now, I'm personally against Web 2.0 in the same way I'm personally against my own death. This is Tyler Cohen in his book, Average is Over, argues that today's big economic divide is between those whose skills complement the computer
and those who don't.
So I'm just going through aspects of this essay. I've just underlined a little bit in each page, so it won't be... It's like collaging different ideas, so it's the overall effect. Then I'm back to St. Isaac, because actually, I'll go forward with this, but I had a spiritual moment, and I... All right, I'm going to jump forward in... Mm-hmm. You know, breaking my own rules here. Why not? Yeah, I had a spiritual moment. There's a paint... a bas-relief... not a bas-relief. An oil pastel I did when I came back from America in 82 of monks... sort of floating off the face of the earth, which is what happened to the Angkor civilization. Mm-hmm. They went into another plane of existence. This is a particular time consciousness. Anyhow, for the first time since 75. Well, let's say 82 when I did it, 83. It spoke to me. You know, like when a picture speaks to you, it's not, you couldn't put it in words. It speaks to you. Mm-hmm. You know, it makes sense. Mm-hmm. And that's what it was saying. It was saying that... this idea, then I interpreted the spiritual moment, because I've only had a couple of spiritual experiences with art in my life. And do you want to know what they were?
Okay.
All right. So there was one, it's back in 65, I went to Paris on Christmas, and one was in front of a Matisse painting, the Musée de l'Art Moderne de something, L'Île de Paris, that one. And it was an early Fauvist Matisse, and of a mantelpiece with a clock on it. And Pantelisty style, and my whole body was picked up and thrown across the room. That's all I remember. And then there was a painting by Apples and Oranges of Cézanne in the Jeu de Paume at that time. And then the thing started to rotate hallucinogenically in front of me. It started like to twist in the circle. Mm-hmm. This is what hooked me into art history. Well, I was there before, but it just confirmed that. And this was of that order, this experience I had in front of this picture. But again, I can't characterize it. Just, you know, when it happens. Anyhow, that gave me the insight, right, because I've been trying to figure out this: how are we going to pull off this mass psychosis thing? Because the only way is to, in the same way that Hitler snuck in fascism and got the whole country behind him, there needs to be this sort of enormous pull, but not in a bad way, in an evil way, but in a good way. How are you going to, you know, poor people, senior moment. It's hopeless, isn't it? Carry on with the thing, okay. Yeah. This is Sir Isaac. Sir Isaac's why hope is so sweet and her labour so light and her work so easy for the soul. He says, because it awakens a natural longing in the soul and gives men this cup to drink. So with Malevich's suggested objects, this hope, because Malevich said basically you can't state anything in abstraction, you can only suggest it, this hope ever shows them clearly, as it were, the very things themselves, so they might examine them in an enigma with the hidden eye of faith. There it was in my heart, as it were, a flaming fire, and it entered into my bones. And of the object, I said, I shall not remember him, nor speak his name. So this is, it's so solidly spiritual, this ascetical homilies of Isaac. It's absolutely, I don't know, I've never read anything like it. Anyhow, I'll carry on. What Malevich says when he says to stop, because that's what he said, don't do it anymore, basically, art, that is. He meant is to stop until we have realized what we have before we give it away without even knowing we have it. So that was why he was then able to go back and come back into sort of figurative art later. But it's like dialectical thinking. You have to have a thesis, you have to have its synthesis. And I suppose we could... The only way I can interpret what's happened politically is that we've had, the voice of reason... voiced by the Labour Party, and now we've had the voice of stupidity voiced by the Conservative Party. And so let's hope that we get some synthesis out of it, which is different to either. Mm. And I don't know, that's the only hope. So without even knowing it... Right, the Fin de Siècle spans 1870, this is, I've got a big broad basis, to 1920, and includes great writers in English.
George Eliot, H.G. Wells, Shaw, Wilde, Henry James, Ian Foster, Hardy, D.H. Lawrence, Joseph Conrad, A.E. Housman, even early Graves, and about and at a stretch, Eliot, Yeats, and Wallace Stevens. It's a complicated argument, but because that's why I'm 158. It's not easy. It's a subtle argument. You know, I try to argue a case for Stalinism isn't exactly an easy one to. So it's taking, but it's not really. Anyhow, David Byrne, who's doing Meltdown at the South Bank this year, believes that the internet companies are sucking all the creative content out of the world. Uh-huh. Now, a documentary on James Brown. Is there a light here that I can? No, I can just see.
No.
There was nobody in the business, period, who dressed no better than him. This is like in Brogue. Then I got. Where you had to ride on the bus with a suit on. This black bower baby is a juxtaposition of something being really tight but really loose at the same time. That's what jazz is. The grace notes come from gospel. It moves to one of these and the three. It moves to the one and the three. Clyde Stubblefield's jazz influence was moving into R&B. That's what funk is all about. I now own that station's James Brown. You know what that is. That's black power. You did not just stop the show. Tell people. That was when it was like on the there was some town in America that was on the point of a complete anarchy. He told the audience, he said, you didn't just stop the show. Tell people off. Then tell people off. And they said, okay, band, let's hit it. He was damned good. Boston was one of those cities that avoided trouble. It's because, like, he took a hold of the situation. He said, hey, man, don't be pushing them off stage and all that. He told them off, you know, naughty, you know. And then, okay, man, hit it. 1, 2, 3, 4. Ba-da-ba-ba-da. And it, Brown's whole sound is an assertion of black beauty and pride. This is why I value the guy so much. Now, the symbolist gave Suzanne an air of mystery. This is their contribution. Moreau, just as Manet was flattered by being accused of inconsistency, expanded thinking across anthropological bands and evidenced his courage as laboratories for exploration in this area. So the colours of the Impressionists was reflected in the multiculturalism of the symbolists. So it was the multiculturalism of the symbolists. He bought like Indian practice in the backgrounds for some of his paintings. Mm-hmm. Sort of his innovation. I went to the Gustav Moreau Museum. I'll get onto that anyhow, mm-hmm. But it was a big revolution, and that was what informed the colour. Now, I went on this Friends of the Earth march, Save the World. On the march, I met a Franciscan monk and told him I'm reading the Ascetical Homilies of St. Isaac, and he said, thank you very much. I mean, in a few words, if you could, you know, encapsulate a lot of meaning just like that, you know, here he goes. The transportation of data on the web uses 50% more energy than world aviation. The Impressionists under Durand Ruel's watch created some of the most exciting pictures ever painted. When, as a monk, you're praying for death, and any tribulation pales against this road travelled. Or worse, your own crucifixion, because that's what you're sort of aiming at as your role model. The Queen, I saw this, the Queen launched the Britannia today in Southampton. I saw her harboured and wondered, did she represent power or energy? And I felt totally energy. So this is like English. When you see like Italian, these big monstrous ships that are like floating skyscrapers. Mm. This had a style about it, and it was where it diverged. One was just about like bringing all these wealthy people to the Caribbean and letting them suck it dry, whereas this is about bringing a bit of style or something like that. Malevich uniquely chose to work with people who were different to him. Not many people do that, and he deliberately chose to work with people who were different. The scientific definition of power equals energy over time. Science wants to use time as the dividing factor with energy in relation to power.
where St. Augustine's definition in his Confessions of time, past, present and future, or one, two and three dimensions, or writing, painting and sculpture, as hearing, seeing and feeling. And I've used these in my... This is why I'm saying my finding about Angkor as having a relevance to... Because when I went, I discovered this stuff in 1965 in Musée Guimet, and when I sort of... it was in an exhibition of naive Yugoslavian painting in Cork Street, actually, and there was a reference to the Vedic practice that sound atoms comprise form in the Indian belief system. And then in 68, I agreed with Ken. We both agreed that sound is the most basic.
Who's Ken?
Ken Ford, my tutor in Leicester College of Art. And, you know, just it's imploded. Where have all these sound artists come from? You know, all of a sudden, all over the world, there's all these sound. Total bullshit. I mean, really. But anyhow, this is where it's... Sorry, anyhow, Einstein said that energy and mass are roughly equivalents. Time gives humans the ability to perceive mass through sound, sight and touch, interpreting St. Augustine. 1610... geologically initiated our era where life is moving into the inorganic. We are a geological superpower as powerful as plate tectonics. When we have solved what dark matter is, we will have discovered one of the greatest mysteries. Without dark matter, there'd be nothing at all. In order to keep galaxies stable, we need dark matter to stop them from buckling. Inflation seeded the universe with irregularities. We can create universes in the computer so long as allowing for dark matter. WIMPs are probably the best possible candidate for dark matter. This is just life is sex, and sex is life, with the same polarities of power and energy and qualifying polarities of force and enthusiasm, with the additional polarities of body and soul. It's a useful application for the totalitarian model, because the grey areas between polarities are much more easily observed and can usefully inform it. What I'm doing, and what I come into in this essay, not yet, but soon, I start using my own examples of how I'm on the receiving end of opposition to totalitarian. It'll all become clear, and it's very much to do with Pierce and his lecture on that he gave, I think, at Stanford in the 50s. Words that do things, like if you're married and you say "I do," there's an accompanying moral obligation that actually to do those things, because there's words that are just... It's not "I do," it's "I do." Commit my life to this, and so on. So they're words that do things. And he's, within these series of lectures, he's made a whole bunch of classifications of words that do things. And what I found, actually, with Tom coming over from Australia, he's like, is when different cultures sort of collide, really. He said, because what I've noticed, you know, I had a lot of people saying what they're going to do, and they don't do them. And then I was wondering about that. And he said... well, it's because you're so honest, but most people don't bother, except in the case of Pierce, where there's words that do things and then people do them. But if there's not that connection with doing them, they don't necessarily do them. Well, I think that's bullshit, you know, I really do. But anyhow, and I've got, because I've never met black people who, for whom that's true, and they haven't necessarily all been to university. So it's not, you can't generalize about things. I think it's a cultural thing. Anyhow, that's not an area. I'll carry on. When you substitute love for sex as life, the distinction between power and energy breaks down, which is why love has a beginning but no end, except as far as the body and soul can. Oh, I can't read. I can't read voice. And it is here we have the link between totalitarianism, a human construct with certain limitations and informed by love. The four themes of the adventures of the Black Square are utopia represent. This is a show at the Whitechapel just recently. I went to a forum, and it's got a lot of information coming from that, I'm afraid, coming up. Represented through the black rectangle floating in white space, year zero. Lyubov Popova's painterly Architectronics, having dissolved the picture plane, if the plane of exhibition of the exhibiting wall be included. Why in art, not life itself? The third theme was Gustav Klute's design for loudspeaker number 7, 1922, where language runs in parallel with the monochrome theme. The triangle becomes the symbol of mass address. Finally, the everyday. Sophie Tabar Arp, untitled, needlepoint, textiles and graphics, lesson painting, all the time were equal, with textile as valid as anything in object making. There's that great show, I just saw the one at the Tate Modern.
Oh, Delaunay.
Sonia Delaunay. Mm-hmm. Just incredible. There's a predictable disillusionment, how it's been co-opted by capitalism. This is abstraction. Tracing the fate of the early promise back to the protean and hope, to quote Anthony Morrison in a Freudian reference. Endless return to monochrome introduces chaos. And this is a bit what I want that inspired my group, an active subconscious, because I've discovered that where I live in the New Forest, in the next village in Lymington, oh Christ, I can't think of his name. Anyhow, he was the lead guitarist with Jimmy Powell and the Five Dimensions, and he's living just like 5 miles away from where that was the group that Rod Stewart started out with, and there was like Prima Donna. Oh, nice. So he grew up with Rod Stewart in Hornsey and Jimmy Powell from Birmingham. Yeah. And this Jimmy Powell in the Five Dimensions, I saw him at the Blue Moon Club in Hayes, and he got this gravelly voice, and it's a terrific. Anyhow, Rod Stewart ended up leaving because and they went on to do that. Anyhow, him, and then there's a Maltese guy who's really good on keyboard, so I'm thinking who does the organic vegetables in the area. So I've asked him as well, they're up for it. So this is the active subconscious. Painting never left Malevich's thought as a transformer of consciousness. Ronaldo Brito, these are some of the artists, said the neoconcretists at the end of the 50s in Rio marked the first moment abstraction stopped believing in itself, its own mythologies, and tested itself in the social field. So this is when it came, this is specifically geometric abstraction, developed systematic device as the unknown element being the destructive device. This is the unknown element is what Malevich coined in terms of cubism, and it's a typical movement in cubist stuff. And obviously super primitivism is rectangles. And cubism, I think, is a little twist on the edge of things. He's got it down, man. Anyhow, the cosmic was a response to modernity, an attempt to systematize it, none of which fits abstraction as a reductive process, instead as a means to proliferate within a collaborative whole. Malevich demonstrates how the inside of art relates to the outside of art. Blinky Palermo was one of the Meiji artists to shift the focus of Malevich's work, to expand it to occupy the whole space of the room, to make it a physical thing. The theory of non-objective, productive non-ambiguity to address the body of the viewer, with art as a form of therapy. Now, this is the South American dimension. The denial of the artist as creator of objects. I wish I could read my writing. It looks good, but yeah. Something about European to include tropical elements. European abstraction into Brazilian culture. Gamora repainted variations on Alba's homage to the square with reference to the Shining Path, the Peruvian...
The Maoists.
Yeah. Peruvian socialism based on Incan communalism to combine modernism with the indigenous culture from a distinctively Andean perspective. For Malevich, the filmic surface should be the content of the film. The encounter of abstract and the real can only take place in a film on the celluloid. Eisenstein notes and drawings for Glass House of 27, it's an unrealized film. During the conception of the film, incompatible worlds interact through glass. It was the eradication of the private, public, a survival of the fossil of bourgeois interiority. Exploring explosion of the private realm with the withdrawal of affect imposed by capitalist modernity. an environment of deathlessness, working to repel the old world, seeking disassociation of objects from surroundings. The coda, within the orbit of capitalist, is called to specular abstraction. The unseizability of an environment, particularly slippery effects of modernity. Artists should be very much part of the community and participate in it. Hassan Sharif, numbered trees, documented the car registration numbers parked by the trees. Depicting and telling can't be had in place. Between seen and said, to be seen. Can there be sound pictures of words? Connections between language and palance. The abstraction of the system can't be defined. Index of disbelief. Force erases law in enforcement of law. The rape of perception, the gaps between the world, the word, and the image through the performance of abstraction. Is the visible true? Malevich thought Rodchenko was bullshit. The camera helped the artist stay anchored in the real world. Abstraction and figuration shared much more of a symbiotic relation than what was attributed to the mainstream avant-garde. The ideals of society can be communicated in the advertising in everyday life. The movement in May 68 turns him into a non-artist. I guess this is Derrida. Not Derrida, the yeah, sorry. Therefore, what is happening within the square is happening within a system. This is the idea of the black square. Performance art is contemporary equivalent of geometrical abstraction. Development of abstraction from the outset was never monolithic. From the outset, abstraction always was at war with itself. It was not homogeneous. Rule makers and breakers. The idea of abstraction, a foreign term, this is in Chinese translation, doesn't reflect its complete meaning. It's to extract images, but in the West, it's more than just merely extracting images. Blackness, and we come on to blackness in abstraction, black culturally, is the effective capacity of the black monochrome. Narration one away from the black artist as subject. Hugo Ball in 1960 in his manifesto of black dada nihilism. What is America about black dadaism? Black radical traditional basics. It's very basic to the... Oh, sorry. I don't like... he didn't like Rodchenko. Sorry. Black radical transition basic to the very notion of Western art. That was my... It's fundamental, born of capitalism. The concept of blackness took shape out of that. The black experience activates, coordinates in the 20th century society, crushed by the power of industrial capitalism. Black cultural expression, blues, spiritual, chain gang chants, organized marches. Art making as assembly. Because of the move of abstraction into everyday life, the black voice can somehow express uniquely within abstraction, legitimately. Who has access to utopia? The everyday in the US right now. The sound vibration being very much violence. This is Peter Halley. Malevich was not well known till the 60s. Tony Smith, Donald Judd, Rationality, but Reinhardt, Richard Serra, Robert Morris led to a shift to the square. Two, confinement. Robert Smithson, it's 1970, derelict spots in New Jersey, compared to eternal measurements of ancient Rome. It was the demise of the utopian ideal. Guston, complications. Barbara Kruger and Michel Foucault in his march. He did a March Piper ad, apparently. He was on an advertisement.
He did a what?
An advertisement on television. He was called the March Piper. I don't know what that is.
Who did that?
Foucault.
Oh, right.
Yeah. Shapiro, economic mechanization of consciousness. Now, geometrical abstraction and spirituality, this is what Peter Halley wasn't, he didn't say very much. Classical, timeless, ahistorical, an a priority structure of human thought. He challenged and redefined as being in the world and tied to issues of power and control. Foucault and prison systems and punishment. Spirituality and geometry, if we see it as geometrization of space, we live in it, becomes more acceptable. So spirituality as a corrupt force. So he saw corrupt, spirituality with geometry as a way of geometrizing space. So it becomes acceptable, so we don't rail against it, and such a corrupt force. Dominance of structuralist thought, he goes on about that. Literature, subatomic physics, and revolution in biology, the DNA code of chromosomes, all life matter, product of linguistic organizations. The crisis of abstraction today, one as a social force dominates reality, so too has structuralism. In its inception was a tool to deconstruct realities in the 20th century, with structural analysis the overriding paradigm. It was originally to dissemble unity as invisible, as visible constructs. In the 70s, as an artist interested in modern indigenous art styles, this Foucault, you can only really understand your own society. We are using social space as being sanctified by geometrization. How things occupy movement, self-reflection. Gauguin contended the whole of art is abstraction. Abstract possible format. These are different suborders of abstraction. Abstract possible, formal abstraction, economic abstraction, withdrawal abstraction. And then this is a Swedish curator we're talking about. To undo the limits of what is possible, to be impossible as a model for political plasticity. Self-organized initiatives through withdrawn initiatives as strategic essentialism. Now, this is Stockholm, is one of the most segregated cities in Europe, which is rather surprising. I know psychosis, and this is about me, is a state where spirituality ossifies, but I'm wondering if, in its initial stages, at least it has been captured, there is enough leeway to work to define a construct within which to operate for a movie of life. That's my own psychosis. Thus, therefore, you can lose it to full bloom, blown, devastating psychosis, when the whole psychosis cuts in, you can't do a thing with it. But I've noticed in its initial stages. Well, I went to a talk in Soho about Blake, and I don't know if I'm allowed to use this word. It's not a swear word or anything. But the O word. All right, don't worry about it.
Okay. Ostrich?
No, no, something like that. Yeah. They do it. A performative act.
We've got about a minute left, Bob.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
All right.
We're running out of time.
Okay, well, I've just gone through it, man. I hope that wasn't boring.
No, no. We're going to probably carry on some other day. Okay. Because how far are we getting with it?
I'm on page 97, I'm two-thirds of the way of what I've done. this is just like a line every page.
It's an ongoing thing. I mean, it continues. You haven't finished it yet.
No. I look at it about 300 pages when I finished, and then from that I'll draw some conclusions. But I just want to get the whole story.
Yep. Well, you've been listening to Wavelength on Resonance 104.4 FM with Bob Parks, whose film... What's it called?
The R&B feeling.
The R&B feeling will be broadcast on BBC later this year.
Yeah, spring or summer.
Yeah, okay. Thank you very much for coming in, Bob.
Pleasure.